probably most of you already know about Dr. Luke, and I certainly interviewed him on numerous occasions in the past and have introduced him numerous times. So I'm going to basically introduce him this time for those people who have not yet had an opportunity to hear Dr. Luke speak. And, you know, really, Dr. Luke is one of the pioneers and leaders in the homeopathic community, and I say this for a variety of reasons. He has really dedicated his life to the study and practice of homeopathy and to the education of his students to a level where they can go out and emulate his own expertise in the practice of our science and art. And this is an unusual skill because, you know, we can all see these very gifted practitioners and teachers who go out there and then they wow us, but they don't actually give us the critical thinking tools and the actual method that we need to be able to go out and practice ourselves. And this is something that's really impressed me when I've traveled around and met Luke's students, because not only do they have an immense amount of knowledge relative to different aspects of homeopathic practice, but they're able to apply difficult concepts in practice. I mean, frequently, you know, I'll have the opportunity to see Dr. Luke present a case, and most of the students in the class will come up with the same remedy, which is the remedy that Dr. Luke came up with. And not only do they come up with the same remedy, they have a basic understanding of how to apply the remedy, the dosage, the potency. This, to me, is evidence of the type of homeopathic education that we require in this country, because with that type of education, you can go out and you can actually practice homeopathy successfully, and this is really the whole key, as far as I'm concerned, to what we need to have homeopathy grow. So Dr. Luke is one of our top homeopathic educators and practitioners, and let me just add, he is the author of numerous books, all of which are excellent, but I just wanted to focus particularly on his most recent title called Maintaining and Achieving the Similimum, because from my perspective, everyone who is involved in homeopathy at any level, whether they're beginner or advanced, should read this book. Dr. Luke has done a tremendous service in terms of clarifying essential issues in the management and practice of homeopathy that are a source of confusion for many different practitioners, even some of our more advanced practitioners. And so I've recommended this book to many people, including those who, you know, who have been practicing for 30 or 40 years, and without exception, every single person has come back to me and said, this is an essential work in homeopathic practice. So if you haven't yet had the opportunity to acquire this book, really you have to get it. It is an essential part of our homeopathic education, and it addresses very, very critical issues in homeopathic practice. Let me just mention that Dr. Luke will be offering a seminar coming up in Las Vegas from November 2nd to the 5th, titled Delusions of Grandeur, Top Remedies and Their Differential Diagnosis, and I understand that he will be also teaching these remedies using live cases. So if you haven't had an opportunity to study with Dr. Luke, this really is a golden opportunity. This is coming up very soon. If you want more information, you can contact Dr. Luke at drluke, D-R-L-U-C, at cybermesa.com, which is C-Y-B as in boy, E-R, M as in Mary, E-S-A.com. So Dr. Dr. Luke, L-U-C, at cybermesa.com. Luke, is there any information up on the Internet that people could look at if they wanted?
Well, my website is actually totally redone in about 10 days from now, so then everything will be on there. And I just also want to let my students know and everybody else that there will be new articles on it for them, one precisely also that I have written, which I think is very appropriate, how to choose a homeopath, which was actually what I did. I did a parody, or I took the article of Hahnemann in his book, Lesser Writings of Hahnemann, in which a patient prince, asked from him, how can I choose a good homeopath? And I have actually given a modern version of it. So it's something for my students that I wanted to give him as a present. And basically for everybody else, and I mean the patients in general, who always ask me that question, where can I find somebody I can trust, somebody I really would love to be with and grow in my health with a particular person. I think it's just a wonderful article. I think, you know, adjusted to modern times, but I give all credit to Hahnemann as usual.
Fantastic. Luke, is that, that's not available yet, is that correct?
That's not available yet. My website will be done in about 7 days from now. So at that point, you can just check on drluke.com. And, you know, it's a whole new website with all pictures of my trips, with also new articles, as I said, and also some surprise announcements. And maybe I'll do it right now for everybody else, that I will go back in practice in July next year.
Hmm. Wow, fantastic. That's a real godsend for suffering patients everywhere. So where are you going to be practicing, Luke?
I'll be practicing in Los Angeles.
Fantastic. Wow, well, that's groundbreaking news for sure. And we're hearing it here for the first time, huh?
That's exactly true.
Wow, fantastic. Okay. So for those of you who didn't quite get it, if you want to visit Dr. Luke's new website, which should be available in about a week or so, the URL is D-R-L-U-C, www.drluc.com. Okay, so Luke, again, thank you so much for taking the time. I can't even keep a track of how many of these calls you've done. You've been extremely generous, and everyone has tremendously appreciated everything you've done on these calls. They have been really just fabulous.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure for me.
So listen, let me just get right to the meat of the matter. We're talking about case management here, so why is it important that we discuss case management in general?
Well, let me give you a good answer to this. First of all, I want to congratulate everybody who is in the business of homeopathy. I know it's the most difficult task, the most difficult modality one can choose, more than any other medical modality I know. So I have admiration, and I congratulate everybody who is involved and dares to be involved in such a wonderful science and art that is still controversial, but is, as we know, certainly well accepted throughout the world, and results, of course, talk for everything. So when I say that, I see that what we do as educators often, what we also express in seminars, what we sometimes express in the classes, what we sometimes express in books, is that we really put the accent on that very first important step is finding the remedy. Obviously, it has to be the first step. And we always think that once we have found the similimum, and we, of course, we hope we always do, then the most difficult task is passed. We really are on sailing with our boat, and we know we have put the patient on the road to independence, I call it, to the road to freedom of illness. But if you think about it, if I want to do a trip from one place to another, from A to B, wherever that might be, I better don't know only where I start, point A, but also want to know how do I get to the end point, maybe Z. And so in other words, the patient, our sacred patient, needs a compass. It needs a map so that patient knows where and how to turn, what to do, and so on and so on. And of course, the only one who can really give this to the patient is the co-pilot, which is the homeopathic physician. That is very important for us. And it is, there's no doubt about it that this was a problem, not just now, the management skills of everybody else, but that has been a problem in the past. Even eminent physicians, such as Kent, even complained about it, and you can read it in Lesser Writings of Kent, that, you know, he said why he was lamenting, if I want to use that word, he was lamenting that why is it so always occurring that the first prescription is the correct one and that we have so many problems, we lose so many patients from the second visit on. This is something that we really have to focus on even now. And unfortunately, what I see, wherever I come in the world, even wherever I teach, wherever I have taken seminars, is that that particular aspect is really the least addressed. It's really the stepchild of homeopathy. And I compare it to, like, since I'm a dancer, I'm a sportman. Okay, you may have a fantastic move in the Argentine tango to start the Argentine tango, and you can't follow it up. It's going to be not a nice picture. It's like beginning a tennis match at 100 miles an hour and then falling apart after the third game. In other words, we must have a persistent chart and a persistent method of trying to answer all questions, all situations, and God knows how many we have, that we encounter with the patient. who is often an obstruction to the cure himself or herself, so that we actually do know how to follow up, that we are definitely what we would call a great co-pilot that we really need to do. It is really amazing, I must say, Kim, that no matter where I come in the world, it's always the same what I hear, the same questions, which are all basically have to do with management. They always are like, well, when do I know when to change the remedy? Now, how do I know that this remedy has done all it could do? Isn't that something we ask ourselves? You know, how do you know that my remedy even cures and not palliates? You know, very often people really, and the patients too, are so satisfied with the result, but the result, when it's really very narrowly and closely examined, it's not a cure, but really a suppression. The last thing we want to do is to imitate allopathy in all its facets. So this is very, very amazing that it's always the same things I hear. I even hear people saying, oh, well, when your patient suffers from an acute, let him palliate it and I deal with it later. You know, is this a good approach? This is the things we need to ask ourselves. You know, how do I know when a new remedy is needed? This seems to be, when I pose these questions, it seems to be that I'm actually going to the beginning of homeopathy, and I'm sure among you might say, wow, know all the answers to it. Yet, I have to tell you one thing, when I pose these questions, that very rarely do I hear a correct answer when I go around the world and pose these questions, not just to students, but also to fellow homeopaths. So it is something, I think, if we want to succeed in homeopathy, that we must know that the first step, which is, of course, finding the simulamen, is not easy. But sometimes we get lucky. There's no doubt about it. Sometimes we even get lucky in finding the simulamen. But I can tell you one thing. No one can get lucky in doing a good management. There are so many different options, many different questions the patients have, many different situations, that there's not one single answer to it, and one has to always go through their mind. Can it be this? Can it be that? Can it be this? There are several options, and there is only one good one. And of course, the vital force will tell us if we did the right thing on the next visit. So here, from the second visit on, I mean, the first visit might look as the most difficult one. It is the second visit, really, where the homeopath can shine, where the homeopathic practitioner can show that he knows what he is doing. The second and subsequent visits, obviously, because every time, and this is the interesting part for me as a homeopathic physician, that every time you get a patient from the second visit home and the next ones, you have a different patient, hopefully. Hopefully in the right direction, obviously, because you can have a different patient also in the wrong direction. So there is many questions that the people ask, and even professionals, and I hope we can address some of those, obviously, tonight, so that we clearly see. I know most of my students obviously will pretty much know those things, and I hope we have many questions from other practitioners that are stuck with their management, because that is something for me that I love doing, because it accentuates the individuality of homeopathy, which is, as we know, one of those main staples of homeopathy. Individuality is everything. When maybe 10 people can have the same delusion, he is not worthy, or delusion, he will not succeed in anything. Yet those 10 people might have a different explanation. It is here that also the quality of the homeopathic physician can shine, when he can make a differential diagnosis.
Well, you know, Lou, I've had exactly the same experience traveling around, and you know, it's fascinating. It's even gotten to the point where there are whole segments of the community who feel that the only thing that homeopathy is about is finding the remedy. And when you found the remedy, that's it. There is no more case management, because that's the only thing you ever have to give the person. I'm just curious, have you seen this type of situation in the community? What is your feeling about it?
Yeah, this is very common, and it kind of saddens me, because I do, just like you, Kim, who is passionate about spreading homeopathy, I do feel that is the what's holding us back of being very successful. You know, homeopathy, it doesn't matter what allopathy says about it, like even the study in Nature magazine. It doesn't really matter. What really matters is that we can show results. Results is the only thing that makes a difference. And I'm just very proud of my students. when they have results. I'm very proud of everybody who does homeopathy when they have results. But we must also make sure that we can define what a result is, what a cure is, obviously, or I would say the movement towards a cure. And you're right, it is really amazing because I have been now everywhere, be it in Asia, being it in India, being it in Europe, Canada, United States, Africa, even with their sexier schools. It is amazing that the same questions do show up, which shows us that we must pay attention. And I think it's our task of your educators, you know, people who teach in seminars, that not only we don't want to hear, well, here is a similimum, we repeat it 3 months later, and then another 3 months later, because, you know, whatever the reason they say, you know, usually very little, and after 1 year, the patient is cured. Now, I have been for a long time enough in practice to know that I have never seen a case like that, okay? I wish I could, because I would have a lot more time to play tennis, I must say. But once I go in practice, you know, the patient is not even out of the door. I have explained it. I have given a paper with it. And guess what? They are out of the door. They say, what did you say, Dr. Luke? Yeah. Or they come home, and the next day they phone already for whatever reason. In other words, there is many things that come up, and I think it is just a good thing for us educators to give to the student and to any practitioner what really does happen in the practice. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that I like doing live case in the class, because I don't know the case, neither do the students. It's not like I'm prepared. And we see the patient back whenever we see each other again months later to do the follow-up, which is the management, which is, again, that's the only way one can learn from it, is doing it right there in front of the people, in front of the students. So, but yes, you're right, and I think the management, which is really the art of, and art common with science, I must say, of homeopathy, is really the main obstacle right now that homeopathy does not advance as much as it should be, because, you know, I don't have to convince anybody on this conference call that there is nothing better than homeopathy, and I say it from a physician and an acupuncturist standpoint out, there's nothing that can supersede homeopathy. So we should be proud of it, but we also make sure that we keep up the true principles, and certainly that we know what to do when the patient comes back on a second visit.
Fantastic. Luke, you had mentioned about the second and subsequent visits being actually more difficult than the first visit. I'm curious, is there a question that you tend to ask on these follow-up visits? And if so, what is that question?
Yes, this is indeed, it is. This is also quite amazing to me that no matter where I have been or read about in magazines or seminars, I never hear that question. And I will give it right away to you. I just want to say one thing. Obviously, the management is a little different if you apply the fourth, fifth, or sixth edition of the Organon. And to all those on the line, and it's not my students, I know that, who are still doing fourth edition dry prescribing, I would just plead with them to absolutely study the advanced methods of Hahnemann, the fifth edition split method and the Allen method, and apply it like he did, not, you know, adjust it to their own whatever inventions, because believe me, nobody has ever invented anything. It was already tried by Hahnemann, so, you know, we can be sure about that. So you will see when I just maybe address certain management issues that I will have to say, well, it will be different for the 40-day prescriber, the dry prescribing, the wait and watch method, 3 pallets or whatever, or even Ken thought it didn't matter how many pallets one was dropping, oops method, I call it, into the mouth of the patient. So
yeah, tell them what oops means.
Yeah, oops, you know, oh, I just threw 20 pallets in your mouth, but it doesn't really matter. You know, but that is, of course, something, unfortunately, something that it's Kent's legacy, and it's not something I'm grateful to him for, but otherwise I'm grateful to him for a lot of other things. But, you know, so it is different for the people, and I can only tell you one thing, that people who have finally addressed it, and I'm not talking just about practitioners, but also patients who finally read about it, or, you know, people in study groups who read about the watery method, the split method, or the fifth edition, and finally applied it, that cases that were actually stuck, not because the similimum was not chosen, not the, it was the similimum, but yet they were stuck and they were applying then the fifth or sixth edition, especially the fifth edition is really totally unknown in the world, I must say, that the case went forward. And imagine, Kim and everybody else, that here it wasn't the wrong similimum. You know, people might think, oh, my gosh, this case is stuck. It must be something wrong. Maybe a miasmatic block, maybe the wrong remedy. Most of the time, in 90% of those cases, people will change the remedy and never come back to the similimum that they at first, through hard work, had found. So this is a tragedy. And therefore, people who are not aware of the fifth edition split method, I would just plead with them, you would never, after this conference, never, for acute or chronic diseases, give another dry dose. Forget the dry dose. And never mind. Bottles I could find everywhere. I could find them in Africa, in Kenya. I could find them in India. I could find them in Sri Lanka, where we had nothing. Bottles, I was called Dr. Bottler, Dr. Bottle. Well, that you can't find anything with water. So I can't just, if you don't believe it, just try it first. I can say one thing, which I'm very grateful for. Many people all over the world do write me after they have started using the watery doses, and it has changed their practice. And, you know, your patient deserves the best. And that is always primordial with me.
So, let me just interject for one second.
Yes.
Those of you who want to find out more about the fifth and sixth edition posology methods, Dr. Luke's book, which I referenced earlier, called Maintaining and Achieving the Similimum, is absolutely the most clear and precise description of those two posology methods. And, again, if you're interested in this, that is definitely the work to acquire. I'm sorry, Luke, please go ahead.
No problem. Yes, I want to answer your question, though, because, you know, again, too, when the patient comes the second time back, you know, there is just one question that actually plagues every homeopath, obviously, and the question is, do I need to retake the case? Do I need to retake the case? And I'm, of course, going to let that follow with another question. But do I need to retake a case? Imagine retaking a case means an hour work, at least. Now, or do I just ask a few questions, which may take 5 minutes? The problem with retaking a case when you don't have to retake the case is very obvious. If you think you need to retake the case, it's already in your mind that most likely you have to look for a different similimum. And here again, too, that's just what I just said before. It might well have been that you had the similimum. You just did not know what to look for, what to ask for, obviously. And, again, the subsequent question that comes to you, do I need to retake the case? One of those questions that I always hear from people is that they would say to me, but how do I know when to repeat the remedy? And how long do I need to give this remedy? Which is not as simple as you think. I mean, for the 40-edition prescriber, they think it's very simple. I give, as you say, something. I can be a 40-edition prescriber now. I give you 3 pellets right in the office, makes it easy. Compliance is 100%. And I send you home and say it's a 200C, and say I'll see you in 3 weeks. And that's the end of it. Unfortunately, is it the best method? Far from it, because so many things can happen. So much loss of time can happen with this watch and wait method. And certainly, aphorism 246, which really should be studied very closely, the difference between the fourth and fifth edition is absolutely enormous. The aphorism 246, when it was said in the fourth edition, it was simply, don't repeat the remedy before you know for sure that the remedy has done all it could do, which is a difficult question by itself, by the way.
Sure.
You know, when has it done all it could do? You know, the bottom line is that the answer to that is that usually people wait far too long because they're afraid to repeat too early because similar aggravations are going to happen. You know, so that's not that easy, although they think it's easy. But much time goes lost. The fifth edition, what does it say, Rabbi, in aphorism 246? That you can now repeat the remedy while the patient is improving. That is such an enormous statement. While the patient is improving, you don't wait until the patient is not improving at all anymore. He says it clearly. While the patient is improving, he's not talking, obviously, he says in that first part, while a striking response, don't repeat in any. And that is equally for fourth, fifth, and sixth edition. But you know what? He says, alas, and here is the master speaking, Hahnemann, it doesn't happen too often. Right. So, you know, for those people who think they have it every time, I will come and study with them tomorrow, as long as they let me know. But, you know, I also believe that we are just mere mortals, and it does not happen. I have seen it happening, and I'm the most surprised because I certainly don't expect it. Let's put it this way. I'm certainly surprised that it can happen. But most likely, alas, he says, it most of the time you can know while the patient is improving, repeat the remedy every other day, sometimes daily, he says. Here again, too, this is very important for us to remember and to use, obviously, because it is part of the fifth edition. It's not a dry dose once repeats. It is, again, the split method in watery doses, which is a whole different animal than saying I repeat 200 C dry every day or three times a day or whatever. That is nothing like this. So this is very important. So here again, too, when do I repeat the remedy? You know, that, of course, if you ask yourself that question, you probably assume that you had the simulamin. But this is, of course, the first opportunity when the patient comes a second time with you to ask yourself, did he get the simulamin? Because here, and you see every step is like different steps. You start from a starting point, and you need to be able to keep the tiger by the tail, I call it always. You know, here, is it a simile or is it a simulamin? Is it really the bullseye, or do I have a remedy that's close but not really going to give the full benefit to the patient? When we have a simile, it appears beneficial in the beginning. You know, the patient can be happy, and the homeopath too. But if he asks himself, and this is what the next question is this improvement basically related to just a part of the whole patient picture? A part of an improvement, maybe the headache went away, but nothing else, and maybe there was even a chief complaint. And did the general amelioration, which is, by the way, aphorism 256, I want people to read that once. Well, now, what do I need to look for this first time, even before any improvement will start or aggravation? We need to look for aphorism 256, in which Hahnemann clearly tells us, this is what you need to look for aggravation and amelioration. Okay, and he talks about sleep. He talks about a sense of well-being. And I would add to it, by the way, which he didn't, because he, unfortunately, was not exposed to Jung's teachings with dream interpretation. I would also add to it, is there a change in dream picture because, or in dream, the theme of dream has changed? Because very often I have seen, and this is what Hahnemann could have added in aphorism 256, that the change in a different theme, a nicer dream, a more constructive dream than what the patient used to have after taking the remedy. Immediately, often it is the very first symptom of the simulamin, and that's why it's another theme, I would say, something we should study more in homeopathy too, and that's part of my new book that's going to come up. Is how to give an interpretation to these dreams. How can we link it to our homeopathic simulamin, and how does it confirm the choice of our simulamin? So this is very important. Aphorism 256, look for that first. We need to see this general amelioration. That's what it's really called, an amelioration of the general state, not just a few symptoms. If you have the simulamin and only a few symptoms improve, obviously what it means is that either there is a miasmatic block or there is an incurable case. But, you know, before we even decide to do that, believe me, most of the time it's none of those two. Most of the time it's a wrong prescription. I think we must be honest with ourselves. We have many, many obstructions to the cure that are imposed by the patient, but the first obstruction remains the homeopath. That's us. You know, we need always to do a good interrogation of ourselves, introspection, did we do the right thing? And therefore, we must know that this is extremely important to know when we ask, how do we long to give this remedy? Is this prescription the simulamin? Is this very first question? The patient comes back on a second visit, and we have to ask ourselves, was this the simulamin? And how do we know it? Here is the answer to it. When the first prescription was the simulamin, And I ask this question everywhere, and you know, nobody can answer me, and it really kind of disheartens me because we need to be all on the same page when it's the right thing. When the first prescription was indeed the simulamin, then you know that the patient's symptoms will return unaltered when the action of the remedy dose that we have given, And of course, again, this is different 4th, 5th, and 6th edition, where for the 5th and 6th edition, we have repeated much more frequently while the patient is improving. But when the symptom picture of the patient returns unaltered, when the action of the remedy doses have ceased, when the symptoms return unaltered, another dose of the same remedy is needed. You see what I mean? So that's typical. That's the only question we have. So the real question, the very first, most important question one asks on the second and subsequent visits, every visit that the patient comes after that, is, has the picture remained unaltered, is the question. If you can say yes to it, it means you can continue with the same remedy. Because what do I mean with unaltered? It doesn't mean there is nothing changed. That's not what it means. What it means is the same symptoms return, not new ones. We'll talk about it, maybe what else is possible. The same symptoms return, except, of course, that some of the symptoms of the whole complex of the patient have disappeared or decreased in intensity and frequency. Even if you say, well, I have a headache, I had a headache initially every third day, and now, thanks to the treatment, to the remedy, I have the headache twice a month and less intense in intensity, less strong, then obviously the patient has improved. And but we still have to call it the patient comes back unaltered for us, because what it means, we are going to repeat the remedy. So that's for me the main symptom, the main question. Always, and I have never heard it seen the question either way, in written or heard. Is the picture unaltered or is it altered? That is the million-dollar question on the second and subsequent visits.
Sometimes the patient reports or new symptoms, and we see maybe the general modalities change, or general physicals change. So what happens when the picture changes like that and you actually do see a different picture?
That's a very good question. It is actually, you know, more of a complex question in a certain sense, because there are more different answers. In other words, let's just see. Most often, the patient comes back and says the picture has changed. Okay, but first of all, like I said, just make sure to really ask, yes, but are all the other symptoms still there, but maybe less in intensity and frequency? Then it's still unaltered for us, okay, although that's altered for the patient. Just want to make sure we don't make a mistake in that. But as you say, there's no doubt about it, that indeed the patient, the symptoms return are altered. What does that mean and what are the possibilities? Okay, so when I ask anybody on this conference, when the patient comes back the second time and the patient says, hey, doctor, this and this symptoms are gone, but those and those symptoms I have now. What does it mean? When I ask this question, everybody on the conference here should be able to answer this. And by the way, there are not less than 5 different answers. So here again, we are immediately, when the picture is altered. If the picture is not altered, it's easy. We repeat the remedy. We go on, obviously, and we're not talking about potency or anything like this, again, 4th, 5th, or 6th edition. But when the picture has been altered, then actually we have more difficulties, there's more possibilities. Let's just say the first thing that can appear. And people, you have to, and this is a very important one. And why is it important? Because the patient will automatically do something wrong. Let's just say you treated somebody for asthma, and all of a sudden the patient is saying, well, I have nothing now. When I came back, while I was in treatment, I was repeating the remedy, I had nothing but mucus discharge. And therefore, if you don't say anything, or I had a rash appearing, if you don't say anything in advance that this can happen, and you say, and you don't say you can't do anything about it, this is excellent. This is what we call, obviously, everybody knows on the teleconference, the right direction of the observations of hearing from the interior to the exterior. But you must tell the patient that new symptoms, just, and even when they're new, even when the patient never had discharges, even when the patient never had a rash, they must be looked upon as exteriorization, which is one of our set of observations of hearing. Even in traditional Chinese medicine, we have the same thing. Then we must say these are indeed new symptoms, but it is not a wrong prescription. That, of course, is an exception to the new symptoms. When new symptoms appear, we must keep this clearly in mind that that is a good thing, and we must, of course, warn the patient of not going to go to over-the-counter drugs, because that's enough available to actually go against it and suppress this, because that would happen. And before you know it, I have seen it so many times, the patient is, of course, sabotaging your whole treatment. So that's definitely one of those things that can be new, besides, of course, the real new symptoms, symptoms patients never had. Obviously, we know that's the wrong prescription, especially when very little else has improved, maybe a little bit of the chief complaint, but then having many other new symptoms commented. That, of course, is the wrong prescription. However, the first thing, when the patient comes back to you and he would say, I have now a new symptom. I have what we call accessory symptoms, as you understand. This is the very first thing one needs to think of. If the patient says, comes back to you and say, I have a headache, no matter what you're treating him for, no. I have a headache, and I never had a headache in my life. The very first reaction should be for you, and maybe there is improvement, all the other things, the very first reaction has to be, is this an accessory symptom of the remedy that I have given to the patient? You know, check it in your materia medica. You don't need to know all these things by heart, but it's certainly one way to get to know your materia medica. So it should be almost an instant reaction from the homeopath to check immediately, is this new symptom that the patient never had? Is it an accessory symptom? You know, and is this belonging to the remedy that I have given to it? And then, of course, we need to ask ourselves, and what are we going to do with it, which we can address later. But you see, new symptoms appear, wrong prescription, with the exception of rash discharges. Accessory symptoms is the second thing that can happen. There's no doubt about it that when the symptom picture can change, that old symptoms can return. And then, of course, we know also that we don't change the remedy. Although, obviously, after one remedy or even after this first visit, in the second visit, not very often, if the layer is pretty big, will we see this appearing. So we are much more concerned with the first and the second appearance of changing of our symptoms. So, but all symptoms, eventually all symptoms will return because we have a new layer coming up. So this is something that we need to keep in mind. And of course, a fifth case, and that hopefully we don't have too often, is an incurable case. No matter what you do, the symptoms will be added, you know, of the natural disease, obviously, as the patient goes down. And even maybe accessory symptoms of the remedy by the repetition. Here again, too, what method you have used, the fifth and sixth versus the fourth, makes all the difference in the world for the suffering of the patient, and even incurable cases, so to speak, incurable cases, can therefore be well addressed. So that's very important. So as you clearly see, first question always, did the picture return unaltered? That is a very good thing. Let me just say one more thing about this now, too. A special note, sometimes when we have old symptoms coming back, and the patient would say, yes, but, you know, I used to have headaches, but not that strong, not that frequent, then we don't change the remedy, but we do change, obviously, the potency, frequency, and amount, the dose, the potency and dose and frequency of that particular remedy, of the same remedy. We don't change the remedy. Here, too, you can clearly see that we have many more possibilities with the fifth and sixth edition. First, the fourth edition, where we just have the ladder of Kemp, I would call it, where we just repeat the right doses. So keep in mind, always is the picture returned, you know, unchanged, is the number one question that one needs to do without any doubt. Because otherwise you retake cases you don't need to do. Imagine, an hour work instead of 5 minutes. I'd rather go play tennis a little bit.
Luke, that was a great answer, and it really demonstrates how there are so many different aspects to case management that have to be considered. It's not just a simple do this and that type of response. It really is an art, and I think you're really illustrating that how true that really is. You know, Luke, I can see that I've got actually some more questions that I wanted to ask you, but I can see that we're running out of time. Would it be okay with you if I opened it up to
participants? Yeah, open it any time, and we can address other things too.
Yeah,
anytime.
And that way, if I have some time at the end, I can ask questions. But
it'll be my pleasure.
Okay, great. So actually, there were some people who wrote in with some management questions and issues. I thought I would just start by reading one, then let you comment on that, and then I would open it up and let some people ask their own management issues. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. All right, so this is a letter actually was written to you. I read, Dear Dr. Luke, first, thank you so much for writing, Achieving, and Maintaining the Similimum. You have given me my life back and my husband his sanity. 7 years ago, he had a mental breakdown, and while homeopathic treatment since then helped, he would still have relapses, sometimes with delusions. Over a year ago, work stress again triggered post-traumatic stress from his early childhood. He had been beaten often, sometimes into unconsciousness by the woman who looked after him for soiling his diapers. He was experiencing great anxiety and panic and was yelling and screaming several times a day, reliving this and starting to go into delusion again. The homeopathic remedies were not effective, and his homeopath decided to repeat Lachesis 5M as it had some effect 2 months previous, but that didn't last, and it had been a good remedy for him a year or two before. I was desperate and coincidentally had just started reading your book as we were studying dosing for our study group. After reading the first 3 or 4 chapters, I knew this is the way to go. My husband's homeopath knew nothing about split dose. He does fourth edition prescribing, but had no objection to giving the remedy in that fashion. With great trepidation, as my own anxiety level was close to that of my husband's from all his screaming, I went ahead, and within a few days, a miracle occurred. The woman disappeared from my husband's conscious mind and receded into the background as a distant memory. This was last November, and after lots of ups and downs for about 6 weeks, his lifelong anxiety has gone, his blood pressure is way down, and the itching back that started several months before the original breakdown and would keep him awake at night is also gone. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart. Both of us will be eternally grateful. So, you know, Luke, when I read this, first of all, it's really touching, it really kind of, I think, illustrates what you were talking about earlier, which is that it's not just about finding the correct remedy, the similimum, but it's also about giving the correct dose and the correct potency. As you can see from this woman's experience, by reading your book and following the posology methods of the 5th and 6th edition, she was able to achieve a cure with exactly the same remedy that had been given using the 4th edition. First of all, do you have any comments on that?
I tell you, I have, this not the only one. I get daily emails from all over the world this way, and I'm very happy about it. As you can clearly see, you're right, this is a perfect example. Here it is, the similimum, so to speak. But the similimum is just more than the name is the right remedy. Okay, in this case, the similimum must be the right dose, the right remedy, obviously, the right dose and the right potency. And that, you always need to sit on a stool, you need 3 legs, obviously, and that's the 3 legs that we need to do. And clearly you see this, you know, because otherwise what would happen? You know, another homeopath would say, hey, already give this remedy, you know, and it didn't work, right? It had no lasting effects. And you abandon Lachesis, and you never come back to it. There's no doubt about it. And there goes the patient, right? You lose a patient. So again, I'm glad that I'm very grateful to, you know, I'm always grateful to people when they write it to me, because at least we can say, like Hahnemann, we didn't do it in vain, all this writing and studying. But anyways, he had some excellent questions. I thought he might go ahead and read one.
Yes, yeah, so let me read the first question. So the first one says, concerning the above case, every time my husband took Lachesis, he would develop red rashes which would come and go, which indicated that the remedy was working. He had no recurrence of symptoms since at least January, but continues to occasionally get rashes that last a couple of days. Does this indicate that the remedy is still working and not to continue constitutional treatment with another remedy, even though he has many symptoms that look like lycopodium? Also, how can one be sure that the remedy has done all it can? What indicates that its action has ceased? So that's that magic question you said.
Interesting, isn't it? That it's just exactly that question that we addressed. And like I said, first of all, I must congratulate this homeopath for being open-minded. And number two, that indeed, she said, let's just look at the whole statement for this first question. Every time her husband took Lachesis, he would develop red rashes, which would come and go, which indicated the remedy was working. Indeed, my first comment to that, even if the patient never had rashes in his life, as you just said from before, this is one new symptom then, but it's still exteriorization. And Harman even clarifies also in chronic diseases that when rashes appear, it's often at the end of the treatment. Okay, so here now, when she says he has no recurrence of symptoms, that's of course very important, since at least January we're talking about now more than 8 months. Continues to occasionally get rashes that last a couple of days. So the question is, does he indicate that the remedy is still working? It doesn't indicate here in this particular message to me if she's still giving the lachesis. But it's interesting what she says. First of all, let's take it literally what she says. If there's no recurrence of symptoms since at least 8 months now, the next question has to be, and this is where the next difficult question comes, okay, well, are there symptoms? Because he says, I thought he has many symptoms, what looks like a poison. Not for nothing does he say this, by the way, and it drew my attention immediately. First of all, the first question that has to be said is indeed the picture changed? Remember, first question.
Sure.
You know, when she says, everything is gone, if that's what I read, no recurrence of symptoms, but has the picture changed? In other words, is there a new symptom complex? In other words, also, is there a new layer? You know, the definition of a layer is obviously every layer has its own symptomatology and its own causality without any doubt. And that it looks like a podium, well, guess what? It is the complementary remedy of lachesis. Guess what? I also look at the causality and I can look at not just lachesis. We know all these ailments from it, lachesis, ailments from grief, obviously, black tie, jealousy, black tie. But I really look what happened to the patient. You know, it's really vexation. And then like a poison is a big remedy for that, obviously, or ailments from vexation. So in my opinion, you know, how can one be sure that the remedy has done all it can? Obviously, when, you know, it looks to me that it has, you know, my next question would be to understand the whole thing is, are the other symptoms, you say, many symptoms of what looks like a poison, it's probably now what I would call that second layer, the deeper layer. And it's a complementary remedy. It's always more difficult, by the way, to differentiate two layers when you have two complementary remedies following each other, although one always should first ask itself that question. Can I find a complementary remedy that fits this picture? Or can I find a remedy that follows well lachesis that fits this picture? Now, if it looks like a podium, believe me, it's like it walks like a duck, it smells like a duck, it is a duck. It's like a podium. Without any doubt. So most likely it's exactly what has happened, and the underlying layer, which I think in this particular case when I look at this, looks like that's what will resolve everything. It will restore the patient's self-confidence, you know, the grief that was done, the humiliation, the mortification, ailments from mortification, vexation, certainly great on like a podium. And since lachesis worked out well, I think if she sees a lot of symptoms of like a poem, it is because it is indicated. No doubt about that. So you see, but the first question really had all the questions I posed. Has the picture changed? Right?
Sure.
Do we see another picture appearing? Are there new symptoms coming to an old layer, but a different layer? This is very important for us to ask that question. Are these are old symptoms coming back? But yes, this is, and I have seen this mistake, by the way, and I'm glad the lady brings this up. I've seen this mistake made by many homeopaths. You know, they say, well, these are old symptoms. Okay, so they say, well, I'll continue with the same remedy then. But isn't that what Herring says, set of observations? These are old symptoms, therefore, we need to give the same remedy. Yes, but no if it is a different layer. You see what I mean? If it's still the same layer, yes. But if it's a different layer, it's easy to make that mistake. If you only ask the patient, well, have you ever had this before? And the patient say yes. You might think, great, all symptoms returning. It's easy. No, you must make sure now if the picture is not totally changed. Here again, too, remember that very first important question, has the picture totally unaltered or has it been altered? And altered can mean you have a different new layer. So that's, and I think this is what's going on right now with this particular first question.
Interesting. Luke, the woman did write in a second question, but I thought maybe let me give some other people an opportunity to ask.
Yes.
And then we can always come back to that question.
Yes, afterwards. Okay.
So let me unmute the line. Does anybody have a specific case management issue that they'd like Dr. Luke's help with?
I do.
Okay. Who is this who's speaking?
Laura.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Solara.
Solara. Okay, Solara, go ahead.
Solara, go for it.
Try to speak loud so everybody can hear.
I am also an acupuncture physician, and I had a patient who came in with 7 surgeries in 6 days 10 months ago and still having severe pain. Started out with breast cancer, got a pneumothorax, put in a drain that was defective and broke off inside of her, another surgery, infection with septicemia, another surgery, another drain, dissecting aortic aneurysm, and also another pneumothorax and then another drain.
That's modern medicine, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Coming to me for pain.
And what happened with the patient? She's still in pain, you say?
Extreme pain on Neurontin, Vicodin, and Percocet.
And where is the pain? Is the pain where the incisions were or what?
Almost all of them are with the incisions.
Yes, well, here I can tell you right away something about this. Imagine, put yourself, which I always do, in the place. I hope this you have enough ask because maybe you have a different question still. But here I'll give you the answer anyway because of what I think is happening. When we see something like this happening, imagine, put yourself in the place of the patient. And I always do because it is one way of trying to understand the patient as good as you can, although you never can be the patient. But imagine 6, 7 interventions, and as I hear this story, it's always, you know, one comes out of the other, you know, the peritonitis and the infection and the pneumothorax, you know, this is, you start with something and it's like a never-ending process. But when such an assault, and I call it an assault, I call it a battle, I call it a war, you know, when such an assault is done 6, 7 times in such short time, it's called an indignation. This is an assault, you can really almost really compare it to a sexual assault. It's a rape. It's a rape on the dignity of the patient. And I have seen it many times when that happens, when the pain, and I give you another example that I have, which is similar, you know, with breast cancer, you know, they opened it, they removed it, and then 2 years later, the person still had pain in the incision, which you're talking about too, you know, and of course, what do? They open it again thinking maybe there is something wrong. In other words, they repeat the trauma, they repeat the assault, they repeat the rape. And with this particular patient, not to mention what an effect it will have on the violent force, but we cannot underestimate in these circumstances that the indignation that the body, even unconsciously for the patient, because it is not the patient, unless you kind of will explain it to her, will say to you, but you can bet your marbles on it that indeed this is a situation of indignation. And this is very classical Staphylococcus situation, by the way. And the cases I had disappeared, the pain disappeared totally by giving just Staphylococcus. And obviously in this case, you have to choose the right potency, which is a whole different animal. Just make sure, I'll give you quickly some indication. If there is still pathology, obviously one has to start a little bit more careful with 6C or 30C. If it's mainly psychologically now and just the pain and it's psychologically, you can even start with 200C. But for all purposes, I think I would start with 30C, 50 distance split method, obviously, and do a test dose and see what it is. But I can tell you that most likely that will work very well.
So, Laura, that was excellent answer. Was that exactly what you were asking for?
Oh no, but
did you want to ask
me something more then?
Go ahead.
One of the things that I started her off with, the Bellus Perennis, when she was still on the Neurontin and the Percocet and at times the morphine, and it did help quite a deal. I've only been seeing her for 3 weeks and she's already reporting a 60% being better than when she started coming to me. But a week later, after I gave the first dose of the Bellus.
And what did you do? Dry dose, 200C, or what do you do?
No, wet method.
And what did you do? What did you do? 200C dry, or what did you do?
No, I put the Bellus Perennis in an ounce of water and had her sip it in the office. One pellet.
I have it.
Then,
okay.
Then a week later, I really wanted a few days of the Bellus to be working, and I was feeling bad, but she was presenting a case of where it's two pictures depending upon the movement and where it is. And I do want to give a little bit more of the case. When she presented to me, her head was hanging down and to the right, and she was not aware of that. And she was also having severe neck pain and a frozen shoulder, mainly because of pain from the incisions from the two pneumothoraxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I put her in a neck collar and had her repositioned where she would know where her neck is supposed to be. The neck pain is resolving. I'm also doing Surround the Dragon, and it's easing up a bit. But I gave her a 6C Bryonia in water again. Actually, I gave her this in a 1 ounce bottle and told her to take 10 drops when it was really severe pain. And she says that it is helping, but she's not willing to come off of the pain pills yet. Then this past week, the pain has just been starting to turn into a whole lot more of a hypericum nervy type pain. The other things that she was first complaining about, she said, oh, well, they're totally gone. Like the pulling, stretching pains, like the adhesions.
Mm-hmm.
Then it came into, but it still hurts any movement. Now it's coming into burning. But I'm not wanting to be more allopathic and repeating too many remedies too close together. I'm wanting the Bellus to really work, although now it looks like I might be giving her Ignatia.
Okay. Okay.
Am I doing these too close together is my question.
Okay. No. Okay. I understand now your question, too. And I might not even change my opinion, by the way, right away. But anyway, so I'm going to ask a question, too. In other words, what was the nature of the initial pain? I know you say no, electrical and sharp and burning, but what was the initial pain? Was it more dull? What was it more?
She does not know the difference between dull or sharp.
Okay,
she has a very hard time putting it in pictures, but what her words and what her movements were was that it even hurt to breathe. Anytime she moved, it was like a band, but very clearly only where the scars were.
Okay.
It wasn't like band like going around my head or going around the whole body, band from scar.
Okay. I have some remarks about this whole thing now. First of all, let's just even say, first of all, that Bellus Perennis would be okay, that it was the right remedy. I know you put it in water, but what you don't do is follow all the instructions what Hahnemann told us. In other words, you put it in a bottle, the patient, you know, and again, is this a chronic case or an acute already? We know if it's more than about 3 to 6 months, you can call it chronic and it'll be different. But what you need to do, though, no matter when the patient has to repeat the remedy, be it acutely or chronically, the patient needs to do succussions with the bottle first, or you're going to come to a standstill. And that's the very first thing I need to say. If, and it's a big if, Bellus Perennis is the right remedy. Obviously, Bellus Perennis is a great breast remedy, without any doubt, a great traumatic remedy. You know, we know it very well for postpartum as the very first remedy, even better than Arnica. But I still have my doubt if it is the same, if it's the right remedy, I must say it. And why do I have my doubt? Number one, because the pain seemed to be changing in nature. And that's why I was asking you about what was the original pain. If the pain would be more dull, let's do it this way. And here, too, we have the observations of Herring that we need to keep in mind. In other words, we know all those four that we have, you know, that we know everybody has learned. But there are a couple more observations, and I have really taught them to my students. Let's, for instance, say that, and that's what I need to, I would know the difference between dull and stinging or burning, but anyway, maybe not everybody. But let's just say, if the pain moves from being first more dull to then more sharp pain, that, of course, would actually be a good moving, it would show actually direction of healing. So this is very important. If also, in other words, if this is also a musculoskeletal disease or whatever, when there is diffuse radiating pain and now it goes to a more intense local pain, then also this is a moving into the right direction of healing. So you see that here, I can tell you right away, not only is the number one question, has the picture remained unchanged? That's number one, and that you need to ask yourself even in this case. And number two question is, does it follow the observations of Herring? And that's the second most important question. So I am not sure if you are able to give me that answer what you see here, but I still would say, I certainly, if Velasperennis does not, if the picture stays unchanged, except maybe less intense, less frequent, but what you're telling me here is that it's go more to sharper pain, electrical pain, is it more severe? I don't know. I still would think that looking at the circumstances, from Willenhaus method, I don't know if you know this method, but it's a wonderful method to actually do on this particular case too. Even a von Bernhausen method will take in account all the modalities. Obviously, what is it worse with, now when does it happen, and so on and so on, what is it better with, and so on and so on. But don't forget that it also takes in account the most important, which is the never-well since, the etiology. And the etiology for me is the assault that has happened on this body. It's an indignation situation. So that becomes the number one modality, followed by the other modalities. And then obviously, at the end, von Bernhausen always uses the mental emotional state of the patient that has changed since that. It is certainly something to also think of to bring us. But so in other words, what you do, much better than what we're trying to, we can easily fall into this situation, by the way, that what did I say before? Make sure when the patient comes back that it's not just a local problem that has improved. The general improvement of the patient has to be there. I did not hear that from you. In other words, aphorism 256 has to appear before I even see any change in this particular pain. Otherwise, I just am able to suppress, and I call the word suppress, the local pain by what called a specific remedy like Velasperennis for breast. But it may not really, and in my opinion, it probably doesn't because it does not have that indignation. It might not really cover the whole patient picture. Okay, so that's my take on this.
Thank you, Luke.
Her mental...
Well, you know what, let's give some other people just an opportunity,
okay.
And then if you want, you could, if there's time at the end, just... Because I know there's other people who said they want... I'm sorry, but you, just give everybody a chance because we don't have too much time left. So is there somebody else who would like to have a case discussed with Dr. Luke? Hello?
I have a case if nobody does.
Okay, go ahead.
We all have a case, no?
I know, but nobody's speaking.
I am a case myself, so what?
Yeah, but you're a good case.
Okay, go
okay,
for it.
Who's speaking now? Who's it?
This is Maggie.
Okay, yeah. Maggie, go ahead.
Yes. I've had a client of mine on Argent Nitricum, and the reason I first gave it to him because he did have those that severe anxiety, and he whenever he'd go to the movies, he'd have to look for the exits, and
right,
he's always
right.
trying to prepare for danger.
Right.
The remedy fit him perfect, and he's been doing well on it, but it's kind of like I feel it's a slow process. But what recently happened is that prior to him coming to me, he had a little, like, cyst on the lower lid of his left eye, which had been removed 3 times. Well, with the remedies, it brought it back to the surface, but he was very paranoid, and the doctors kind of scared him, told him it could be cancer. So he had it removed. But at this time, you know, I asked him prior to his surgery, do you know what they're going to do? And he says, yeah, they're just going to remove it. It's no big deal. I'm back to work the next day. What ended up happening is they did this whole procedure where he took out a lot. He had to replace it with other skin from another area. They ended up sealing his eye, like closing it up, and he had it like that for 2 weeks. Now, you could just imagine when somebody with this severe anxiety came back with even more anxiety because now it's loss of control. You know, his anxiety was very, very bad. And so what I did is he was on 200 Argent Nitricum, and now I went up to 1 mg, and we had to point to succussing it 10 times. Then I went up to have him drink 2 ounces at one time, and that calmed him down, and he's doing better now. Now, my question would be is, prior to all of this, a couple things I could never get rid of is he had constant discharge in both of his eyes in the morning. Even with the Argent Nitricum and the other symptoms doing better, that's one thing I've never been able to really get
okay.
to.
Okay. Will I answer that first? Will I answer that first? Okay. So I think obviously here is a perfect example of suppression, you know, with allopathic means. You know, here again too, the formation of whatever that particular cyst or tumor on the eyelids was appearing as an exteriorization, not to mention, by the way, the discharge that you're talking about it. So that's going to become very important. So what is happening? No, because of the suppression, the viral force obviously is suppressed over and over again by the allopathic surgery. That also means, as we know very well, that in order for us to bring back the cure, which is the direction, the exteriorization, we're going to have to increase the potency of the remedy without any doubt, because what worked before might not work anymore now, as long as the viral force is able, obviously, to react in a secondary reaction aphorism 64. You know, because the viral force, at some point, when we keep suppressing, the viral force is like a person within you that wants to help you, and at one point it will say, the hell with it, you're so dumb to keep suppressing it, I'm giving up. Apparently, the good sign with this particular patient is that it has not happened yet. When you say the anxiety, one thing I would have asked Maggie, just to keep in mind for you too, because obviously the suppression has taken place, and now you say, no, obviously, which I understand, imagine what anxiety he has now when the process wasn't really as smooth as they promised. Now, next day you work and it's not true and you sit there for 2 weeks. Then you must kind of make sure that the kind of anxiety he has at that point, that it has not taken the form of another remedy, obviously. Obviously, we know argentinitricum, the big what-if remedy, stands for the greatest phobia remedy without any doubt and covers many fears and anxieties. But I would precisely ask that question just to make sure that what kind of anxiety is it? Is it anxiety about what? No. It's, you know, describe to me, is it still the previous one, what he had before, which we don't, you know, then obviously argentinitricum is still the remedy, and it looks to me that, you know, by increasing the potency and of course doing the 50 days and that you're making headways. To answer the question, but I have never been able to get this discharge away, I would say bravo, because I am glad, because if you would have said to me that you did that discharge away in 2 days, I would have said to you, look for another remedy, because you would have been suppressing it. In other words, what you have here is what Harman called in aphorism 202, you have here a clear sign for you that as long as this is happening, you need to continue the remedy. This is absolutely fantastic tool for you to continue with the same remedy, because you know the remedy has not done all it could do, as we say. In other words, you need to continue. And by the way, I would even look for more exteriorization, more discharge, because then you know you're a winner. I have had many times with patients who would absolutely talk about cups full of pus coming out of their penis, by the way, and they were shocked, but thank God I had told them about exteriorization and they didn't run to their doctor. So in other words, you have the sign. As long as the discharge goes on, and you have to explain it to the patient, it is a good sign. I know it's not easy for the patient. Make sure he doesn't really do anything local or over the counter. But if anything, it looks to me that what you should do, increase the succussions, make sure you always give the minimum dose. As you know, it is very important. Aphorism 276, what does it say? It says clearly that if the homeopathic remedy is even homeopathic to the case, in other words, it is the same minimum, that a too large of a dose will harm the vital force. So I would say to you, if you don't see too much movement and not more discharge coming up in the next weeks, this is what you need to do. Up the suppressions and make sure to give a dose, something like 3 drops from the bottle and 3 drops in the first cup, and 3 drops in the first cup would be the dose. For the patient. So I can never tell you that enough to keep the dose to a minimum. As Harman says, in chronic diseases, the first mistake homeopaths make, and it's still the case, is that they think that the lowest dose would not help if it is the same minimum. Aphorism 276 also. Keep that in mind, and you'll be a winner.
Great. Other questions or a case manager problem that they'd like Dr. Luke to address?
I've got one.
Who's this?
This is Rick.
Oh, hey, Rick.
Rick from Dallas. No, from Texas.
Yeah, unfortunately, right here in Texas, right?
Hey, we don't hold it against you, Rick.
Well, that's good. I'm actually a Yankee, so
okay.
I always try to get
Wait a minute. Away. There's another Texan on the line.
Oh, okay, yeah. We don't hold it against you neither.
Well, mine isn't specific to a case, but it is a case management issue.
Okay.
That in the last year I've sort of run into on a number of occasions is instances where a shift in somebody's state that is showing you whether they're undergoing treatment currently or not is dedicated solely to just the evolution of this person. What I do is I go in chronological order. It could be dentition, it could be puberty, it could be pregnancy, or it could be menopause.
In other words, one of those instances is changing the person. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. So I've run into some fun dentition cases that were being treated properly, in the infants. So what I'm wondering, and it really goes for all of those states, is you have an altered picture. Some of them, of course, that altered state could go on for much longer, duration-wise than some of the others, but maybe take dentition specifically, and maybe with your experience you could tell us, my major concern is if I'm already treating this person and they're flourishing, and then we get to teething, and sometimes all hell breaks loose,
right.
am I palliating that state because it clearly presents a whole nother remedy picture, or am I running the risk of suppressing something else?
Right. Very good question. Now, would it be only to the dentition, Rick, or would you also, when you say menopause and all, or puberty, because that's really a total different thing, I think. So I can answer this question first. And once I have answered this, maybe you can give me an example if we have time for the other thing. Let me give you the answer first on this dentition, because it is a good question, obviously, because anybody who has babies, and my friend Rick is one of them, and so I know this speaks from experience. What you really asked there, and this is also very important, because it's another question in the management, what Rick is asking there, it is, of course, when should I use an acute intercurrent? That really is the question, because rightfully he asked himself, and he is very well aware of it, being a good student, that he don't want to suppress, just palliating right away, because, as many people do with the slightest, particularly acute event that comes up, they would start giving something from their little remedy box. Now, in this case, though, the question really is this worth an acute intercurrent? This is where aphorism 38 obviously comes in question. That is the question, aphorism 38. It tells us, aphorism 38 tells us, of course, that the stronger the similar disease postpones or suspends the old chronic disease. And, of course, I said the stronger the similar disease, that could be acute or chronic. But in this case, we really perfect example of talking about an acute, strong event. Dissimilar to what Rick was maybe treating previously before this particular baby. Let's just say before the baby was born at Muir, I say something. And now, the teeth come through, and now indeed it is such an acute, painful event. What does Hahnemann say after 73? When do we need an acute intercurrent? When the symptoms are moderate to severe, and of course dissimilar to the chronic remedy. In other words, in this case, rightfully, Rick could give a teething remedy, chamomile, obviously, one of those, without, and of course, at the same time, suspending, without any doubt, that's another important facet, suspending the chronic remedy, because if you're going to give the chronic remedy, as some homeopaths really say, well, you can keep on giving the chronic remedy, it will resolve everything. How can we say that? Because it sins against the first law of similars, okay, that we have. So that's the last thing we want to do. Hahnemann doesn't say that. It's obviously an acute, moderate to severe symptoms. Anybody who had a baby with teething problems, we know that's not pretty to hear. You can go ahead, but suspend, obviously, suspend the chronic remedy And after the particularly phase is over, Harman does tell us, though, just to make sure that after the teething is over, chamomile is not needed anymore, that we actually need then to see if the picture has not changed, because sometimes it happens. So we can't just accept that the chronic remedy from before was still present after the acute event. And that was different. So it's a different thing than when you talk about puberty, when you talk about menopause, when you talk about pregnancies. Here we have what Jung would have called periods of turmoil, he called it. You know, everybody has a period of turmoil, especially the puberty. Then we know that it's not just a local symptom. There's not a local acute event. It is a whole change of the whole person. And that would be very much different, because what really happens during those turmoil periods is that the miasmatic states, maybe they were only a little bit flaming, maybe they were latent, maybe they were even dormant, they always will come to life around puberty to start with. So it's a really a warning for us when we have children and we see problems before they reach puberty. We better get in a hurry fixing those problems, because we know all hell breaks loose when puberty comes through. Even parents know that without knowing homeopathy.
So, Luke, with these latent or even dormant miasms coming up, do you find that when a young man or woman goes through puberty, for example, or an elderly woman goes through menopause, that the remedy picture will change very frequently, or does it tend to be the same remedy, or what's your experience with this?
No, but very much often, first of all, because it might have been very difficult, if the patient has a latent or dormant miasmatic influence, it's not easy, you know, for most homeopaths to pick up on latent symptoms of any miasmatic state. In other words, it might well be that until that point, unless we got a little lucky or we are good, that we had the right remedy already given, and we will avoid, you know, the whole picture. So most often I would say, you know, the picture becomes very clear. It is really truly a gift to us, the periods of turmoil, that the picture becomes more clear. Maybe you have been looking, you had the right remedy, you don't need to change, obviously. But apparently not. Let's just say it this way. If the symptoms become more clear and more, you know, volcanic, I would almost say, and then it really means that at least you have not given the stimulant. You know, maybe the right remedy, but certainly not the right repetition, not the right potency. So that's for sure, you can say that, right? So if not the wrong remedy, obviously. Certainly, that's why we love pregnant people, you know, contrary to most modalities, even TCM included, we love pregnant people because they really present the full picture to us of anything that was latent. And on the top of it, I always say to the patient, I'm going to treat two for one, because, you know, as you know, we treat the fetus at the same time as a pregnant mother.
Right. Great. I think we have time for probably one more case management question or problem. So here's your golden opportunity to have a master practitioner give you his expertise on your own cases.
I have one.
Great. Who's this?
Diana.
Oh, hey, Diana.
Hey.
Go
okay,
for it.
Dr. Luke.
Okay, my dear.
Thank you. I saw a patient about a year and a half ago for severe anxiety, came to NAPCARB and started her on an LM1. She has been on this remedy now since then, and all the anxiety has disappeared. Also fibromyalgia, severe fibromyalgia, gone. Completely better, but now she's starting to have menopausal symptoms. Frequent periods, migraine headaches, different things like that. And my question is, this has been a wonderful remedy for her up until now. So here's the question, what do I change it?
Yes, well, it wasn't that the question I'll be posing. That's good, Diane, that we have a practical example again. Because remember, do I need to retake the case? Is the question. Again, there too. Is the picture unchanged, right? Now, remember what I said to you, and for everybody else, and my students know this, Miss, you keep repeating this to yourself. Has the picture come back unchanged? It looks to me that if all the anxiety is gone, what you're saying, and now the menopause sets in, not unfortunately, because this can certainly be the onset of another miasmatic influence, that the picture really is totally different. So you really have to say to yourself, what happened to the old picture of anxiety? has it disappeared completely? As I have been going along, and I'm glad to hear with your LM method, and that really has been stable, because, you know, not just for, you know, for quite some time, in other words, you know, and these new symptoms of the menopause, you know, most likely what can be, even if the anxiety was not totally abolished, we call it the old chronic disease, even if it was not totally abolished, at least we have now definitely, again, a stronger dissimilar, without any doubt, a stronger dissimilar chronic disease, or acute now, but it certainly follows aphorism 38 again, where it will postpone, or maybe the previous layer was already cured. So in this case, indeed, you need to retake the case and look for a different remedy. In other words, as you understand, if the symptom picture is totally different than what you were treating for anxiety, then when you would continue with the anxiety remedy, it would only create accessory symptoms of your remedy, and if anything, you would start creating more anxiety, and imagine what would happen. You would continue with your anxiety remedy, and yet you have to have actually a new remedy at this point.
Luke, I'm curious. You're talking about the possibility of changing remedies here, and I can certainly see the logic of that. My question is, do you find that frequently the remedy that's needed after a situation like that tends to be the complementary remedies? Or do you find that, obviously we've got all this information from the old-time homeopath.
Yeah.
Or do you find that frequently it's a remedy outside of what is considered the standard?
Okay, very good question. We all know when we have been practicing homeopathy how difficult it can be. You know, if anybody tells me it's easy, I come and study with him too. But, you know, there are some easy things. There are some what I call golden tips. I even wrote a little book about it, and my students have it, you know, of many remedies. But one of the golden tips, too, really is that, indeed, when a remedy has worked well, one should at least look first in the complementary remedies and also the list of the remedies that follow well. There are some very good little booklets out there, by the way, that have what we call relationships remedies, you know, and everybody who is in practice should have one like that. So you can look this up, and that's the first thing one should do. If the picture that the patient is presenting now, if it's really one of those complementary remedies or remedies that follow well, and I can tell you from the experience, that often this is indeed the case. Imagine what time it really saves you, and it gives you, you know, when you find that, and that it gives you much certitude, you're so much sure about your prescription, and what a wonderful thing it is. I can tell you even more simple, that I have had sulfur cases, and guess what came up next, you know, and was waiting for it, Colicarb, and Colicarb cured. I mean, it looks like, hey, wouldn't we like to have this every day, but to tell you the truth, this was the case that was done by another practitioner, and even after I changed, after did the sulfur and was successful, and then he had the patient again, he never saw Colicarb, and yet that cured. You see what I mean? So we must take advantage of those wonderful things that the old masters have taught us, and really examine this. And as you asked me, yes, indeed, I can see that very often, but obviously I will not now make a point of it. That's the first thing I will do. Is it a complementary remedy or a remedy that follows well? But if not, obviously, it is looking for the similimum again. Retaking the case is definitely the case.
Fantastic. Well, Luke, I can see that we just have a few minutes left. Let me just mention for everybody who joined us a little bit late, Dr. Luke will be offering a seminar in Las Vegas November 2nd through the 5th, titled Delusions of Grandeur, Top Remedies, and Their Differential Diagnosis. And, of course, there will be live cases. From being on this call, you can probably have ascertained at this point that Dr. Luke really is a master homeopathic practitioner and educator. And absolutely, I can guarantee that if you go to a seminar like this, you will gain a tremendous amount of information. And even more importantly, you'll be able to learn how to apply that information in actual practice. Luke has a very practical approach, and his students walk away from his seminars and courses actually being able to practice homeopathy, which is quite amazing. So also, I did mention his book, Achieving and Maintaining the Synomium, a few times. That book is available from a variety of sources. We do sell it in our own bookstore. If anybody would like to contact us, the toll-free number is 866-599-5950. That's 866-599-5950. If you want more information about the seminar in Las Vegas, or you want to get any information about Luke's general courses, you can email him at Dr. Luke, that's D-R-L-U-C, at cybermesa.com, C-Y-B-E-R, drlucmesa.com. That's D-R-L-U-C at cybermesa.com. Luke, I want to thank you again. It's been a fantastic call, an immense amount of really valuable and useful information for the studying practical homeopathy. I want to open up the lines and let everybody personally thank you, and thank you again.
I want to thank you, Ben, and thank you, first of all, and everybody else on the line, by the way, for doing a fantastic job. I wish you all the best in everything what you're doing, and I'll be proud of you. I just thank you very first in the
thank
first
you, place. Luke. Let me open it up and let everybody thank you, personally. Hold on.
Thank you.
All right. All my love. All the best.
Bravo.